The disruption to journalism in the next 20 years will probably be greater than we've seen in the same period starting at the beginning of this century. So what might it look like? The Future of Journalism series attempts to paint that picture. I'm Peter Wilkinson with the Alliance for Journalist Freedom in Australia, and we say it's flawed planning to create commitments to a future if we don't know where we're heading, to create legislation and issue court decisions, to encourage journalists on a career path if we don't have a good idea of where we should be going. Piers Grove is the publisher of two niche publications, The Daily Oz and, better known, the satirical Batuta Advocate. He's also against the deal being brokered by the ACCC, which will in some way probably force Google and Facebook to pay News Corp Australia and Nine Entertainment and other publishers for content, delaying, he says, an inevitable decline in their current business models and punishing niche publications in this battle of the giants.
Piers, as one of the small digital publishers, in your case, The Daily Oz and The Batuta Advocate, how do you see the future of journalism?
I'm inherently optimistic about the future of journalism. I think at the very base of this conversation is that there is a need and a role for good quality information for the public, and the public want that information. So I think the future for journalism is very bright. And that the opportunity to reinvent how journalists create content, reach their audience and engage with their audiences is a renewal opportunity based on new technologies and new pathways to audience. So, yeah, I feel great about it.
So how are you framing your publications? How are you setting them up for the future as distinct for what many would see as publishers that are struggling to make traditional publications better?
I think the opportunity that we've got in our publications is to start with a blank piece of paper and to go to where the audience is and to come up with formats that resonate with those audiences. The incumbent businesses have got a lot of legacy infrastructure and systems, and they're trying to retrofit those existing systems into this new paradigm. And that's a heck of a lot harder than starting from scratch. So we don't need to monetize every single moment with our audience in the way that the traditional media has by having content right alongside advertising. We're happy to take a longer view, to take our content out into social media and to engage with our audience there, to build the loyalty and to create a sense of, as I say, community.
So if I understand it correctly, you're going smaller and niche, targeting specific audiences, where the big publishers like The Australian, The Age, The Sydney Morning Herald in Australia are going for a mass market. So do you think that they are going to end up also catering for a much smaller audience in order to survive, and so are going to have to continue to restructure dramatically?
I don't think they'll succeed in doing that. I think that's trying to turn an elephant into a gazelle. I think the new players will come up and they will take over the space. And as you say, there's a lot of niche opportunities out there. I think the really big incumbent guys have got a really tough struggle ahead of them. And if they want to remain relevant, they'll probably have to do it through acquisition rather than transformation.
So are you seeing publications like The Australian, The Sydney Morning Herald and The Age eventually dying out, are you?
In terms of their incumbency, yes. I don't think that the mastheads will necessarily die, but I think we're already seeing a huge generation in the sort of under 30s who don't engage with those brands. They see those as legacy outlets, and they're using the modern digital publishers as their sources for news. Now, that's not to say that the digital publishers are at the level of being able to deliver the same content as the incumbents, but I just think that that loyalty is falling away, and with it will go the revenue as the incumbent audience basically dies. So, yeah, I think things like SMH and The Australian are actually in a lot of trouble.
So that frames the current fracas in Australia about the fight between the major digital publishers trying to extract revenue from the major digital giants, Google and Facebook.
Yeah.
So how do you see that playing out, given what you've just said?
It's interesting. We've been coordinating with a bunch of independent digital publishers lately on this issue, with the ACCC and the Facebook and Google being defined as publishers and the revenue share as part of that. We very much built our businesses on never getting a cent from these channels of Google and Facebook. We took the deal as it was presented, and I'm not saying that Facebook and Google are golden, wonderful organisations. They're very, very self-interested. But we bought into that on the terms it was offered, which was we create content, they distribute it on their platforms, they help us aggregate an audience, we help them keep that audience on their platform so that they too can monetize it. That's the deal. Like, we didn't start the Daily Oz with the expectation that these big monoliths were going to pay us. And yet the big guys, the Newses and the Nines of this world, are going, hey, just a sec, you know, it's not right. We need to be fed over here, because they're such hungry beasts that if they see an opportunity to bring a few shekels in, they'll take it. Whereas the digital publishers see the platforms for what they are, which is a deal with the devil to achieve distribution.
So in that case, it's logical that you would see that the regulator in Australia, the ACCC, the Australian Consumer and Competition Commission, has got it wrong.
Look, I think the whole process has been poorly handled. I think the idea of holding these platforms to account as publishers is not a crazy one, but that we've reached this do or die standoff seems like a very flawed outcome. The ACCC is taking a very high moral view of the situation rather than a pragmatic commercial one. In my best scenario, the deal as it stands would be torn up, and Facebook, Google and the ACCC would go back to the table and start afresh. I think the intent is good. I think the execution is poor.
So what's the intent? So what do you see as the intent? To get Google and Facebook to pay for, or just simply to tax Google and Facebook so that the government extracts money, or is it to pay for journalists? What is it?
I think the intent is to hold them to account as being publishers and not just being a platform, and I think that's right. I think the idea of using this as a mechanism to extract revenue from these big companies, I think, is flawed. I think, you know, if you're going to tax somebody, do it with a tax. If you want to use the revenue from that tax to drive a social outcome like better quality journalism and content, well, then divert the tax and use that to subsidise the organisations that are doing it while everyone's still trying to figure out their business models. But this system, I think, is wrong in that it's really a battle between Nine, News, Google and Facebook, and yet the way it's being handled is that organisations like the Daily Oz and Batuta Advocate will just get caught up in the mincer of a fight we don't want to play. Like, is there an opt-out button so that we don't get minced along with all the other independent publishers?
So the way you're describing it, coming back to journalism, is that there will be fewer journalists, not the huge newsrooms with hundreds of journalists that we have in Australia, Nine and News Corp. So there'll be fewer journalists doing logically fewer stories?
I hope not. As I said at the top, I think there is still a genuine desire in the community for quality content. The fact that we haven't figured out how to monetize that to pay the journalists to create the content, I don't think is in itself defeat. I think we can have smaller newsrooms outputting still a really good broad spread of content, but not necessarily trying to cover every single base. So the Daily Oz is about providing timely, short, snackable, but proper news content for people under 25. That's our game. I think we can do it with a newsroom of 15 to 20 journalists. I think we can build a culture around that. We can streamline our content and we can be incredibly useful and relevant at that sort of size. Batuta Advocate runs out of a very small newsroom, and it's really just providing commentary and creating pathways for people to engage with the news cycle and also very much with pop culture and social debate. So it does that job really well with a small, very small team. So I think the idea of the juggernaut is gone, but I don't think that means less journalists. It probably does mean more newsrooms and tighter niches on their brief, not trying to do everything and own the sector.
And logically, more nimble newsrooms too. So something might pop up and be relevant for, say, until this decade, but completely not fit for purpose for the 2030s.
Yes, and I think the idea of turning the soil rather than trying to create beasts that go for a century is probably relevant at the moment. Maybe in 20 or 30 years' time, we'll have a much clearer picture of what news gathering needs to look like. But right now, I think we do need to build organisations, test them, let them live their useful life and then turn them over again. It's, as I said, I'm very optimistic because there is the room to experiment like that. And look at a brand like Vice, which did an amazing job of coming out of left field, creating a different model, producing 15-minute videos that talk very specifically to an otherwise disengaged youth audience, have done tremendously well. Now part of News Limited, now a bit more grey and probably ready to be turned over and replaced with somebody else in that space, another way of attacking that audience.
We could say the same of the Huffington Post, couldn't we, too? It's, I understand it's struggling now. It was relevant for a period and it's struggling now.
Very much so. I think Huffington Post was wonderful because it showed us that it could be done, that you could actually engage a really large audience online, bring together a disparate group of contributors and journalists and output what, from the user's perspective, was a cohesive brand and identity and community of readers. But yeah, I think that's been proven. It's not as necessary.
So how do we improve, how do we distinguish between journalists and the information that's published on social media? The issue is that social media information is essentially taken at face value, if not outright distrusted. Journalists, unfortunately, also have a very low trust factor. Mm. How do we improve the trustworthiness of journalists so that they are distinguishable or distinguished from the social media content?
I think I'm a bit idealistic here. I believe that if you create a newsroom and you start producing the content, and that content is associated with a brand, you can do it. You can create very specific online brands that are trusted, that do resonate, not with everyone necessarily, but within a community. If we look at a brand like Crikey, that has really come up over a very long time, I mean, that's been a 20-year brand, I suspect, they've managed to attract a freelance, diversified group of writers. They've got their sources, they've got their reputation in terms of how they gather and report those stories. I think something like Crikey manages to do a very, very good job of standing out by building on, by standing on the shoulders of their own content.
Right. So to be clear, you don't see there's an issue with trustworthiness of journalists, because a lot in the business community and in politics would question that.
Oh, I think there's some very, very big issues. I mean, we only have to look at what's happened in the SMH and The Age since Channel 9's come in, where you feel a much more commercial flavour starting to tinge the content. And you can totally understand why people would say, I don't trust it, it's not what it used to be, because I think they're both statements of fact. But I think this idea that everything gets grouped in together and I don't trust journalism is, it's slightly lazy thinking, because I think there's always, it's just very, very easy to find exceptions to that. And that to me is the interesting piece. So I think the correct statement is I don't trust the bunch of journalists that are working for these big corporate behemoths right now. I wish I had somebody who I could relate to. And Michael West, I think, has done a really good job of building a tribe of people who go, I want to hear what this guy's got to say rather than hearing what News Limited or Nine has got to say. So I think it can be done.
Well, in fairness, you could also say a lot for a lot of the writers in The Australian and the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age as well, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
There are a number of commentators. Phil Curry is he's AFR, but Peter Archer, there's a variety of journalists who are well respected, also a number of business journalists who are very well respected for what they write.
And that's the thing though, isn't it? If you read these papers often enough, you start building up a loyalty to the journalist. And you know, how often do you say, look, I bloody hate The Australian, but XXX is a really good commentator, or, you know, has got a great handle on the Australian economy or climate change. So the masthead, consumers and readers and audiences start to see past the masthead to the contributor. And I think those journalists are going to start getting annoyed with being tainted by their corporate overlords. So they will start to be attracted. It is, without going into detail, with something like the Daily Oz, the richest place for us to hire from, where we get the greatest enthusiasm for what we're doing, is from the existing large newsrooms, where they feel like they're on a sinking ship and they see things like the Daily Oz as the future. And they would actually rather quit their careers in the big guys to come and play with the little guys, where they can actually have an impact and they can go back to those journalistic values. I'm a huge believer in the newsroom. If I can put 10 good quality journalists in there and build a really good culture around integrity and standards, well, then that masthead is going to rise. And I think it's incredibly telling that the journalists are willing to make these moves and support their actions with their feet. It's not ideological, it's practical.
So how much do you see that we are, or, well, the media in Australia is the tail of the US dog? So we are very vulnerable to what's happening with media in the US, which is now highly partisan.
Look, if we stick with the big business model, I think there is a vulnerability there. I think Australia is more engaged as a whole than America. So I think we're a little bit more awake to the risk of it. But look, it's there. I think we see the partisan nature, particularly in Murdoch. I don't think Channel 9 has been significantly in the news business for long enough. I've got to be cautious what I say there, because I know that they've got a very, very big newsroom, but I don't think they've ever used it as a weapon in the way that News Limited has. And I think Nine are now looking across at News Limited and going, there's a game to be played here. Let's start picking some winners. Now, that's a really good corporate model. You can back a government in, you can get the tax breaks you want. You can get cross ownership laws changed. A really, really good idea for corporate, not a really good idea for the quality of the journalism and the integrity of the brands. You've always got to think as a media outlet, are you investing into your brand's capital and your organization's capital, or are you spending it? And I think we see places like News and Nine spending that capital to achieve corporate outcomes. And we need newsrooms to come up that are investing, using their capacity to invest into the integrity and community around the brand, and just taking a little bit off the table.
What you're saying there is to put it in the vernacular, they're chasing clicks in order to look after their cash flow.
This is it, and this is where I think public companies turn into a nightmare in this industry. News Limited has a whole bunch of shareholders and they want to see hundreds of millions of dollars of profit come out of these things. Now, what if that's not a realistic outcome? What if the right structure for a news organisation is a cooperative that is coordinated and owned by journalists and throws off $1 million a year in surplus? But it's not so concerned because its shareholders are aligned around the content and the community and audience rather than around really, really, really fast cars and big houses and stuff like that. So again, this is where I think these guys are in trouble because they're trying to feed a master that is not aligned with the interests of the machine that feeds it. I think there's a lot of opportunity for new guys to come in here with different financial models and different priorities. I mean, we've just seen it with AAP turning into a not-for-profit. The only reason somebody really turns something into a not-for-profit is because they can't see a way of making any profit. And I think that's the case with AAP. A whole bunch of corporate suitors looked it over and went, this stinks. But when a group of people looked at it from a public interest perspective, from a content generation, even a democratic perspective, the value of the organisation re-emerged. And then it became a question of how do we make the numbers work so that this good can be provided.
So what advice would you give our current Minister for Communications, Paul Fletcher, or the two or three that follow him that take journalism down to the end of the next decade?
I would encourage one hand reaching out behind to manage the incumbent legacy businesses. If we lose them too quickly or in the wrong fashion, we will lose so much capacity out of the profession. That we would be rebuilding from a bare floor. But the other hand needs to be reaching out in front and engaging and supporting new models and encouraging experimentation, managing downside and making some level of economic advantage to those who are building the replacing industry. Because as I said before, this stuff is not just about, you should know what's happening in Belarus. This is about the effective functioning of our democracy. So our government should have a very, very active interest in that and should be supporting things like these new digital publishers without sounding too self-interested, rather than letting us get ground up in the machinery of legacy industry trying to survive.
Piers Grove, thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter.